My name's Rebecca, I'm an addict. Dana, you're a bad bitch. I like you. Now, God makes no mistakes, right? Because let me tell you something. This lady right here had 34, and Becky has 40. This is a lifelong journey, right? So you're hearing from two women that have been doing this for a long freaking time. Since I was in pull-ups. Okay, so Becky P. is my sponsor. We're from the Fort Worth area. She's been my sponsor for 18 years. And I owe so much to her. Now she don't play, y'all. She don't play. If you ask her to sponsor you, she's going to ask you some basic questions. Are you working? Where are you living? What are your arrangements? We're going to get your shit together. And she did. She got all my shit together. I'm an amazing mother because of her. I'm an amazing daughter because of her. I'm an amazing sister because of her. I'm an amazing friend because of her. And she'll make you laugh. She might make you cry a little bit. But I'm so grateful to have the chance to introduce her. It's truly an honor. So get up here. Tell us some stuff. Tell us how you did it.
Hey everybody, my name is Becky and I am a drug addict from Texas. Thank you for having me here. My clean date is March the 6th of 98, 1986. That means the day I have 40 years clean in the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. Thank you. And I only tell you that because I owe every minute of every day of that 40 years to the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. It's what got me clean. It's what kept me clean. I didn't get clean because I wanted to. I got clean in Texas. I don't know if y'all do this here or not. Do they have that thing where if you get popped, you have to get a paper signed when you go to meet? Okay. I got that deal presented to me the very first year they had that law in Texas. It was like God was waiting, going, telling the Texas legislature, y'all hurry up. I got a bitch here that we got to send. And... And I don't know what y'all know about politics in Texas, but, you know, they take a long time to do anything. And so, sure enough, that first year I got a DWI, and the probation was, you know, getting your paper signed, etc. So that's how I got here to begin with. And it wasn't because I wanted to. It was because I figured I had to go to a few meetings to know enough in case my probation officer asked me anything. But way back then, they didn't ask you much. They just told you to send your money in. I think I checked in, you know, once a month or something like that. I don't even remember now, but it didn't seem like it was very hard. But that's how I got here. And I didn't get here through the first, you know, the doors of Narcotics Anonymous first time around. All they knew about was the other fellowship. I went there, picked up a year clean there, just higher than a kite. I thought, oh, nobody knows. You know, you find out later, everybody knows. And eventually, but I got lucky because that group, the AA group I was going to, was right next door to an NA group. So there was this group of people that were going to that meeting, and then we'd smoke in the parking lot, and we'd go over to the NA meeting. So I just followed them over there because I needed to know where they were going to go eat when it was all over. I didn't think I needed to be in there. And sure enough, you know, it kind of started sticking. And one day I remembered, and this is such a clear memory to me, I was getting ready to go. I was supposed to be going to choir practice with my parents because they had figured out that if I sung in the choir, I'd get better. I don't know how that goes. And I remember so vividly, I was looking in the makeup mirror and I was thinking, if you don't do this and you don't do it right, you're going to go right back to where you came from. And I had, you know, I peeled the onion. I quit doing a few things. You know, I quit sticking needles in my arm, and then I quit sticking shit up my nose. But I could not stop drinking, and I could not stop smoking. And no matter what I did. And I thought, you know, there's got to be a way. You've seen other people do it. So I called a friend of mine and I went to my first NA meeting on that day. And that's March the 6th of 1986. And I hadn't had pickup since. So, thank you. So, I am not a guru on the literature. I cannot repeat, memorize literature. Chapter and page. It's taken me 40 years just to live what's in the damn book. I don't have time to memorize it. And I'm still working on it all the time. But this I do know, this is in recovery and relapse. And it fits our lifelong journey, why we stay. Today, here is what it says. It says, the progression of recovery is a continuous uphill journey. Without effort, we start the downhill run again. The progression of the disease is an ongoing process, even during abstinence. So what that tells me is, even though I might be clean, if I'm not working a program, if I'm not coming to meetings, I just go nuts. I just go crazy. You know, I do things like try to run people into the walls on the freeway and, you know, shoot people the bird with the big religious sign on my back windshield. Hey, fuck you. Jesus is over here. you know, I mean, I don't think right. I don't think right at all. And I can't think right if I'm not coming to meetings and I'm not talking to people and I'm not looking at where am I today. And I, too, have a sponsor that's great, and she's got less time than me. But she, you know, she knows exactly what to tell me how to do and when to do it. And it works out really well. So, you know, I keep going to meetings, and I've been coming to meetings all along. Now, in the process of the 40 years, things that, you know, have changed. I was a single. I got married. Don't do that. And I married a guy I met in a meeting. He was real good looking. He was a paramedic. He had on this uniform. And on the way home from that meeting that night, I told the girl that was riding with me, you know, I could marry that dude. And sure enough, I did. And that was not a good. It was not a good decision. It was not a good decision. And but I had a big wedding with the big, you know, big gown, and all of NA was there. And I do believe, and I still believe to this day, that was the guy I was supposed to marry when I married him. But he was also the guy I was supposed to be divorcing when I divorced him. Because he wouldn't work. He wouldn't get a job. He couldn't stay clean. And I got pregnant right away, and I thought, okay, things aren't going well. We moved out to Johnson County in Texas. I live out in the county. I bought this old, old farmhouse. And the time just came when I knew that it was time to go. So, you know, I had to end that marriage. In the meantime, I'm going to school, and I'm working in the mental health industry. That made a lot of sense, didn't it? I get a degree as a social worker. I get a license as a social worker. And then I get a master's degree in urban and public affairs, which because I was working in the courtrooms. I worked in the court system in Texas so I could put people in mental health hospitals. That makes a lot of sense too, doesn't it? You know, I may be a drug addict. Honey, you're crazy. We're going... I'm sending you to Waco. And but I worked in that field, and it turns out that being a drug addict in recovery was a good deal, because that had a lot to do with what was wrong and what was going on with a lot of these folks and why they couldn't make the decisions that they needed to make. And I loved the job. I really did. And I worked in crisis. So, I was on call 24/7 for 23 years. And I worked with I trained police officers. Now, that was the oddest thing I ever did. I've got pictures of me with some police officer handing me a certificate for thank you for the training, and we're smiling, and I'm thinking, what the hell? That's the strangest thing I ever saw. And but, you know, it worked. It all worked. And I had a kid to raise, and he's not perfect. He had his own problems, you know, kind of following the path. And you know, I worked and I did what I did on a day-to-day basis because I had to. And I had to keep meetings in there because I had to stay clean. But I also worked a whole lot. I remember having a sponsor that said to me, okay, you're working, you're a single mom, you're going to school. Who are you going to be when all that's not here anymore? And I thought, I don't know. I can't worry about it today because I got to go to work. And, you know, without Narcotics Anonymous, I don't think I would ever have had the courage to try any of that. Now, obviously, I couldn't give my kid away. Although I thought about it more than once, but I had to make a living, and I had to make a living for both of us, not just me. And so I just did what I had to do on a day-to-day basis, and it wasn't easy. It was never very easy, and I was tired, and I was scared a lot I had a lot of fear, especially financial fear. Anybody ever have any of that? If you want something to send you out the door in a hurry, paint yourself into a corner with that shit, because you'll come out of there using every time. And so you have to watch what's going on. And I listened to Todd, I think his name was, speaking last time about, you know, the gambling and you making anything an addiction. And I have that same problem, and I still have that same problem. And I had to keep into meetings to do something about those problems. I have the big food obsession problem, you know. But I can't get arrested for driving around fat, so it's like I can't seem to make it stick, you know. It's like, is that really a problem? I'm not gonna, you know. I can eat a hamburger and drive through anywhere I want to, you know. They can't do shit to me, so you know I have a problem with that sometimes. But you know, it's not good for me, and it's not good for my self-esteem, and it doesn't, you know, and I'm forever fighting with it, and I've fought with it a lot, and I've found some programs, you know, you can find programs for it. They have 12-step programs for that, and, but, you know, I get real resentful about it, because, you know, I don't drink, I don't do drugs, I don't even have sex. I ought to be able to any goddamn thing I want to, but I, you know, it doesn't happen that way, so... I just keep going to meetings and trying to get, you know, talking to people about, hey, this is what's going on with me. And it's all, you know, it's the program has never failed me. There's always been somebody that came along and said, hey, I had that same problem, or hey, take care of this. My sponsor has a disease that affects her spinal cord and her blood. She's a sweet lady in a chair, all bent over. It's just, you know, I mean, her body just disintegrates on her on a regular basis, and she's the calmest, most spiritual, most empowering person I think I've ever met. You know, she never complains. She's always blessed. She's always encouraged. And I think, what have I got? I mean, you know, what am I complaining about? Look at this. Look at what's going on with her. And she works for me as a sponsor because she's constantly telling me, look, you're okay. You're going to be all right. And, you know, all those years that I was using, the one thing I remember thinking the most is coming home and thinking, if I just had somebody to tell me it's going to be okay. I just need somebody to tell me it's going to be okay. And I found that in these rooms. No matter what was going on, through the divorce, trying to raise a kid by myself, people kept telling me it's going to be okay. I filed for a divorce in October. I got my divorce papers on Valentine's Day in February. And then in April of that year, I found out I had breast cancer. And let me tell you something about having difficult diseases where they operate on you. The drugs are really good. That's what you need to know. And let me tell you, when they cut half your chest off, you're going to take them. You need to take them. And I'm one of those people, I do not believe in people suffering pain when they don't have to. You just need to let somebody know what's going on. When things are rough, I take an antidepressant. I've taken it for years. You want me to take that antidepressant. Because otherwise, I'm calling you in the middle of the night going, my life sucks. So take that pill, honey. You'll be all right. But... because treatment is treatment, you know, and I have to make sure that I'm doing that. And so when I went through all the physical stuff with the breast cancer, because then they cut me hip bone to rebuild my breast. So now I've got one breast that's right like this and one that's like this when I lay down. It's a complete night, you know, complete night. The cat gets right in there. He loves it. It's just, you know, nothing's the same. Nothing's the same. But you know what? I lived. I lived through it. And I didn't know. I got this kid, right? And I'm thinking, I don't know what's going to happen. I may not live through this. And I did. I lived through that. I lived through the surgery. I lived through 6 months of chemotherapy. We got past that. About 2 years later, they tell me, you got hep C and you got it bad, man. We got to do something about it. So I had to do 2 years of interferon treatment. No, 1 year. 1 year of interferon treatment. Had to give myself my own shot. Use it for the first time. I had to pull out needles and use it for the right reason. And that was a long time ago. That was before they've made that treatment a lot easier now. Yeah. And that made the chemotherapy look like a piece of cheesecake. That shit was rough. you know, but I got through that too. Now, when I came into recovery in the Fort Worth area, we had a basic text and we had the little white booklet, and that's all we had. We didn't have anything else. And we sat around and read on that basic text every night in that little white booklet. We have developed all this literature that's available to us now, and I want to tell you, I think we've got some of the best damn literature you could ever ask. You know? Our, you know, that flat book to ask all those questions, that brought stuff out of me at 14, 15 years that I hadn't brought out before. The newest book, The Journey, whatever that last one's called. What's that called? There you go. That's a great book. And talks about after the initial, you know, which is part of what the lifelong journey is. You know, it goes on, and we go on, and we have to know how to do that. And, you know, you start running into stuff, well, I might not get loaded over this, but I don't know what to do with it. I had my septic tank went out. I didn't know what to do about that. But I found somebody in the rooms that knew about septic tanks, and she pointed me to this guy and said, hey, call this guy. And then I had to have money. And somebody said, go to the bank. You got a house. You can get a second mortgage. So I did. And I was able to get that septic. That's the kind of shit that scared me to death. You could put me in a drunk tank with a whole bunch of schizophrenics and I was fine. But you had the faucet go out in the kitchen and I freak out. I don't know what to do. You know, and there's nobody there but me, and it was always really scary for me. And you know, I've heard a lot of people talking about they're using their program and what they've learned today to work on those relationships and keep a relationship going and maybe a marriage going or something like that. Let me tell you what I've learned in the 40 years I've been clean. I am not the marrying kind. I don't want anybody pissing in my new septic tank but me. And you know what I've also learned? It's okay. It's okay that I like being by myself. And it's okay that I like that everything I've got, I own. And it's mine. And now it's paid off. So I'm not leaving. And I'm staying right there. And it's, you know, it took me a long time to figure out that it was okay to be okay with being single. Because, you know, there's always somebody that's going to try to tell you that it's not. You know, like your mother. Yeah. You know, my mother's 93. I'm about to be 72. Yeah. Which, by the way, is older than I've ever been before. And she still is like, well, can't you meet somebody? And I'm like, Mom, you know, I spend all my time in Narcotics Anonymous. We did that once, remember? We're not going to do that again. You know? And so, but you know, I have managed to find people who have said, hey, it is okay. It's okay if you're by yourself. And it's okay that you feel okay about being by yourself. And that's kind of one of the things we don't talk about all the time. You know, everybody, you know, we just don't talk about it. So if that's what you're doing and that's where you need to be, that's all right. Yeah. We don't talk nearly enough, I don't think, about the fact that we have a disease. And the disease has got to be treated. And that's why it's a lifelong journey. Even in abstinence. So even if though I'm not using and I haven't used for a while, if I don't come to meetings and I'm not working steps and I don't have a support group or a sponsor, my disease kicks in and it tells me I'm not worthy and it tells me I'm old and fat, which could be true, but we don't have to acknowledge that. And, you know, it tells me that my kid's screwed up and he's not going to be all right. He's okay. He's 37. I don't have to worry about it very much anymore. But, and he has his own problems, you know. He got busted the first time when he was in 12th grade, I think. He got pulled over and they got picked up for some kind of possession. I remember he called me and I said, all right, what's going on? He said, well, I got busted. What for? Possession. How much? 0.1 grams or half an ounce. It wasn't a felony. That's what I was going for. And I said, all right, you're all right. I said, where are you? He said, I'm in jail in Corsicana. And I said, oh, you'll be okay. I've been there. And I hung up. I think the second time he called, I said, don't eat the grits. I remember they were very bad. And So, you know, and not long ago, and he's 37 now, he got picked up again not long ago, fight with his girlfriend in the parking lot of their apartment complex. This is the story I get. They go inside, she grabs a knife off the counter, he takes the knife away from her. About that time, somebody knocks on the door, it's the cops, and he's there with a knife in his hand. So, he gets a felony assault. I didn't even know he'd gotten arrested. You know, he doesn't call me and tell me about that stuff, but we got this thing where I live called the Johnson County Busted Page. They put your mugshot on it. My neighbor shows up with her phone and goes, "Is this your kid?" It's like, oh, shit. You know, what's he done now? He's not calling me because he's learned, okay, she's not going to come get me out. So I call his best friend. I find out what's happening. The best friend says, "I'm going to get him out." I'm like, "That's okay." I said, "Tell him to call his mama." He calls me, and here's what he says. "Mom, it's not what you think. It didn't happen the way they said. You know, people just get upset because I happen to be pretty good looking. I got a really good job, and I can work from home, and they're always trying to bring me down a peg." And I'm like, "Yeah, I think you're one of us, dude. That sounds kind of familiar to me. You know, it's just I'm getting arrested because I'm doing so well." And on top of that, he said, "I just picked up my truck. I got to go. I got arrested in my bathing suit." And I said, "Well, honey, I know people that have been arrested in less. You're going to be all right." And then, you know, I called him. I did the thing. I called him and said, "Look, I know every attorney in Cleburne. I still got some connections with some. I'll help you get a good attorney. Let's get this straightened out." And he wouldn't let me do it. And now, I come from a highly felonious family. Let me just tell you that right off the bat. There's a whole bunch of us. And I'm not a felon, but I'm related to a lot of felons. And I'm the oldest of four. Three of us came into the program. I've got one sister. She never had the problem, but she married our old drug dealer. So there's some kind of problem there. And, you know, there are certain things that you learn that when you live in that kind of a lifestyle. And one of them is you don't take a court-appointed attorneys. And the first thing he said is, "I'm just going to take the court-appointed attorney." And I'm like, oh, shit. So I call his uncle. "You need to call my son and talk to him." But the thing that I figured out is that he doesn't want me taking care of his problem. He's going to take care of it himself. He's got, you know, and he's going to pay for it himself. And I thought, okay, I need to leave it alone. And you know what else I've learned over the years? That the same God that pursued me till I got here, the same God that pursued y'all till you got here, is the God that pursues my kid. And the thing I need to do is get out of God's way and let him do what needs to happen. You know, you got my buddy here that went to jail 3 times, and look at him now. Rebecca did a few little nights in jail herself. We also brought Elijah, who's brand new. We all went to the U.S. Marshals Museum the other day. We're talking, and Elijah finally looked and said, "Am I the only one here that didn't go to jail?" And we're like, "Yeah, it's okay, honey, but you don't have to do it to fit in. It'll be all right. Just keep coming around." Don't listen to us, you know. The thing that I've learned, and this is what's kept me on the lifelong journey, is that, number one, I'm sick. You know, I don't make good decisions. I have to think about it. And first thought wrong fit me to a T. And I still have to think that way. But the God that pursued me pursues y'all. And he pursues my kid. And he's the one that shows up when things happen, like my poor little mama's house getting flooded. You know, we had that big blizzard in Texas a few years back. She calls us in the middle of it. "The house is flooding." And nobody lives close to her anymore. But we got there. You know, my brother did time, and he married a girl that did time. He got out of jail. She got out of jail. My brother's doing prison ministry now. So, you know, they get introduced. She went to jail for embezzlement. They own their own business. She takes care of the books. The shop's doing really well. Can you imagine? But you know, things come together, and it's, you know, and you don't know how God's going to do it. And I quit trying to figure out how God's going to do it. And I think that's one of the things that kept me here, because I thought, I don't have to figure it out. I don't have to have a plan. Now, don't kid yourself. I make plans. You know, even after all this time, I made plans for a group conscious not long ago, and I called all these other girls and I said, this is what we want to do and this is what we want to accomplish, and we're all going to vote this way when it comes in the group. You would think after all these years I'd know better than that shit, wouldn't you? And we're all going to vote this way, and that didn't happen that way at all. And but I did get to say what I thought my concerns were in the group conscious. I did it appropriately. And then those concerns were heard, and then I called my sponsor and said, you're not going to believe what I did. And I said, I thought, you know, this was the way it was going to happen, and I called all these girls, and then it didn't happen. And she said, but they heard what your concerns were, right? And I said, yes. And she said, and the group voted, and you acted appropriately, right? And I said, yes. And she said, then that's exactly the way a group conscious is supposed to go. That's exactly. And now they've spoken, and you heard it, and you got to do what they said. I said, okay, I'm ready to go now. I'll hang up the phone. But she's right, you know. And I had to tell the girls, you know, I'm really sorry I asked you to do that. I should have known better. That's not the way we're supposed to do things. So, you know, we've probably all learned a lesson. And guess what? The world has not blown up because we didn't do things exactly right. The world doesn't blow up because I didn't do things exactly right. The one thing I do right is I get my ass in a chair in a meeting as often as I can. I've recently retired, so now I get to go more, and I get to be involved a little more, and I'm there a whole lot more. And if you've ever been in a meeting with me, what you've heard me say is, you want to recover, you get your ass in a chair. And you bring it back to that chair just as often as you can get here. Because in your group, in that chair, is where your recovery is. You can do a lot of other things for service. You can be at every single event. But if you're not looking to keep your own group going, and you're not there to help them out, and you're not working steps, you may not have a chance with your program, because that's what it takes. And it takes that every day for as long as you're going to be around. And so that's the one thing I've learned, is you got to be in a chair at your group. And, you know, if we don't have a group, we don't have anything. And y'all don't get mad at me, but world, region, and area could disappear. But if we still had a group, we'd still have a chance to recover. We'd still have a chance to recover. And if we don't have groups, area, region, and world don't have anything to work with. So your group is where it all starts. I find that my service works better at the group level. That's where I like to do it, and that's where I think I contribute the most. Years back, I remember in Fort Worth area, when we had like 12 people at an area meeting, and now we've got like, what, 25, 30 groups, something like that. But and we were kind of writing the policies as we went along, but you need to go where you fit in. And if your service works wherever that in that structure that it fits, that you feel good and you're having a good time, that's where you need to serve. And because it's all important. But for me, it's at the group. Because if I don't have that group, I don't have anything. And if we don't have that group and the doors open, there's no place for a newcomer to come. And we got to have a place for them to come. And there are certain things that I have learned over the years that I think are really important. Number one is, get your ass in a chair and keep going. Because as you get older, every doctor you meet is going to try to give you a pill for something. And some of them are not the ones you want. Now, you know, I don't know about y'all, but you know, it seems like the cure for every health thing these days is lose weight. Lose weight. So I was doing the regular doctor thing, and this nurse practitioner starts telling me about this weight loss drug and this program they want to put me on. And I said, well, what's it called? Well, it's got meme in the end. Meme. Like phetamine. Like methamphetamine. And I'm like, I can't do that drug. And she goes, oh, yes, you can. I'm like, no. I said, I can't do that drug. If it's got mean on the end of it, right off the bat. Oh, listen, we won't give you more than you can do. It'll be well regulated. We'll just give you as many pills as you need. And I said, really, you think that's work? Because I'm already trying to figure it out and put it in a spoon or not. So I'm not sure that you and I need to be talking about this. Anybody here doing the weight loss drugs, the weight loss shots? I'm the only one? Oh, good. I'm not the only one. I do those shots. I just started them not too long ago, and it's been successful for me. But once again, I've had to pull out a hypodermic needle and use it for the right reasons. And, you know, I get mine in a little vial. I don't get it in the little injectable thing. And first vial I've got, I get down to the bottom, and I can't figure it out. I can't get it to draw up. I don't know how to do it. So you know what I did? I ripped the top off of it, and I put it in a spoon. You know, some things you just don't forget. And I'm like, man, this shit's expensive. I'm not letting it go. At least I don't have to heat it up and all that shit, you know. Put a damn, you know, cigarette filter in it. Did you ever do that? I mean, like, I don't have to do that shit. But you just, you know, and I thought, this is nuts. I couldn't wait to call somebody and tell them, you're not going to believe what I just did. But, you know, I just had a knee replacement. That's a surgery, and it's kind of a rough surgery. Let me tell you this: if you ever have to have a knee replacement, don't look at the video first. Don't do that. But I had to have medication, and I had to take it. And you know what? I made sure that all the ladies that I work with knew, and they were there, and they were there, and they were there, and they were there. And I was like, you girls can go home now, you know. But you don't do that stuff alone, and I've learned not to do it alone. So you get your ass in a chair, and you make sure people know what you're going through, and you don't do it alone, because you don't have to. The other thing I've learned is, as you get older in Narcotics Anonymous, if you go to a meeting and drink the drug addict coffee, you may not sleep at night. Yeah, guaranteed, you know. But the only thing you can do is take home a phone list, because they all drank it too, and there's some bitch up at 3 a.m. You just gotta figure out who the hell it is and whether or not you want to really call them, and that's good. You can do that too, and it'll keep you going. And my last little bit of advice is, you know, sponsor people. When you're ready, sponsor people. And it is true that when I pick up a sponsee, and I'm old-fashioned, I believe in women sponsoring women and men sponsoring men. If you don't do that, that's your business. It's not mine, but it's just the way I grew up. And I do sit them down, and the first thing I say is, honey, have you got a job? Where do you live? You got kids? Well, here's what we're going to do. You got to get a job. You got to get out of your parents' house, and your kids are really important. Don't think that this comes before they do. You got to figure out a balance, and I'll help you figure that out. But you got to do that, and that is what I tell them. I don't tell my people to call me every day, because I don't want to talk to anybody every day, and that includes you. I'm sorry. But I am going to tell you that you need to be in a meeting every day, and you may not see me there every day, but I've done my part. Now it's your turn. It's your ass we're worried about right now, not mine. So you put your ass in the chair, and then you can call me and tell me what your meeting's about, but I may not be at every single one of them. But you know, you do it for 90 days, and here's the deal. I am not your recovery. You got a whole room full of people that are your recovery. And so you get to know them too, because I'm not the only one. And believe me, I'll have a day when I tell you something and you're going to have to call somebody else and go, you know what she said? Is that right? Because it might not be. It might not be right. Because I get a little weird. You know? I live with a cat. And my cat's an asshole. And, you know, if... So my house is actually a duplex. I own the other side, but it's an old build, and you can hear through the walls. And the people that live on the other side are like, you talk to your cat like you're married to me. Because just the other day, he stayed out all night. And he came in and slept all day. And they heard me say to him, you know what? You can't go out all night and sleep all day because we're not married. But he's a cat, and he does what he wants to anyway. And then the last thing that I would suggest that you give serious, serious consideration to when you sponsor is sponsor young people, because they can fix your phone. And if you sponsor them right, they'll even come over and fix your TV. And occasionally I have to get one and say, hey, come do this in the car, because this bitch is telling me something. I don't know what it is. and I can't get this off the dash. And I drive an older car, but you know, it's got things on it that I've never figured out with all this technology, why can't they ever fix a car that said, you're too loaded to drive, you're too loaded to drive. But I guess if they'd had that, I'd have never got here to begin with. So God takes care of us, right?
Yeah.
And He's going to take care of you. And here are the two things that I always want people to hear. Number one, you do not know how much we love you and how much we want you here. Because we do. If you're fairly new, we want you here so bad that you don't even know it, because we know why you're here and we know what goes on. And we know that if you get in here and connect with us, you don't have to do everything that we did. But even if you do, it's your journey and your God, and you're still going to be okay. And the other thing I don't think we say enough is this is a disease. And you can't just pretend like you don't have it. My take is step number one is the most important step you'll ever work. Because if you get that step down that tells you that you are powerless over your addiction, you will not decide that you don't have to go to meetings anymore, or you don't have to be connected anymore, or you don't have to read a book every once in a while anymore. You'll never decide on all of that. Because you got step number one in your bones, in your veins, that tells you I'm powerless over my addiction and my life has become unmanageable. And if you get that step and believe it, work on it as long as it takes, you'll never give up. Because you'll know who you are and what you've got. And you don't have to you don't have to leave. You can stay. So that's all I got. Thank you very much.